Hello and welcome. This is the In the Money Players Podcast, our show for Tuesday, March 12th. PTF here, far from the Brooklyn Bunker, actually in the press room now at Cheltenham, and getting very excited for 4 days of coverage here. We're going to be doing special little shows, me and Sean Clancy. We did one this morning right from the paddock. It's a little noisy. Apologies for the wind and the background noise. Maybe I'll come up with something better for the other days. But getting Sean's thoughts on these races, which, of course, are, pretty darn fun to bet. If you've never seen it, if you're any kind of racing fan, you've never seen Cheltenham, definitely go on your ADW and check out the coverage. It's like nothing you've ever seen, and some great opportunities as well. Sean will have some good thoughts on that. Definitely made some money over the years following him in. Another option is to read his analysis over at thisishorseracing.com. Check that out as well. We are doing a regular show, maybe a truncated version of the regular show this week, but we do have Kentucky Derby prep action to recap and a bit of a debacle to discuss in terms of the tote issues from last weekend. We'll get to that in a minute. The man who we're going to be speaking about it all with comes to us, the work that he does for InTheMoneyPodcast.com, covering Naira, also behind the mic at Sam Houston. He is Nick Tamaro. Nick, how are things, buddy?
Doing well. Been eventful couple of days over here stateside while you're busy living it up in the old country.
The old country, that's Italy. Come on, don't we can't.
That's
we
true,
can't
yeah. An old country, I should say.
That works. That works very much. Let me ask you, let's do our plug that I want to get in anyway. This will save me having to record an ad to put at the top of the show. I do want to remind folks about the contest coming up at Sam Houston. The date is going to be April 6th, and this is a great opportunity for horse players, and we're going to need people to act soon because there is a cap on the number of entries that we're allowing. Can you give us the rundown on this Sam Houston betting challenge that you were instrumental in putting together?
Yeah, very excited about this coming up on April 6th. They're a little concerned about the amount of people who are playing. I think with the NHC 3 weeks before the event, it's definitely slowed down sign-up. So I should let everybody know this could be a very, very lucrative opportunity to get a BCBC spot. I'm talking like maybe a 1 in 15 kind of opportunity for a BCBC spot, which you're probably not going to get a better ratio than that at any point during the year. There's also going to be two NHC spots for 2025 available, $2,000 all bankroll and entry fee. And it's going to offer up racing our live races, which you have to bet $1,000 on. And then you can bet your other $1,000 on any races during the contest window, which is during the entirety of our card from Keeneland to Aqueduct to Oaklawn or Santa Anita. And that is also Bluegrass and Wood Memorial and Santa Anita Derby Day. So there'll be a lot of good racing that day. We're going to have a nice place for everybody to sit, and we're going to have a reception Friday night. So it'll be a really good opportunity to not only qualify potentially for the BCBC, but also the NHC. And if you're going to bet that kind of money anyway, it's a great way to do it. And we'll have some good size fields. I would imagine it's closing weekend for us, which usually our racing is pretty strong at that point. And there's no fairgrounds or Delta to compete with. So yeah, really looking forward to that. So if you can make your way down to H-Town for that first weekend in April.
Great racing and favorable terms for players, two things we love to promote. Yeah, we'll be talking about that net more between now and then. And maybe people are just a little late to pulling the trigger with the NHC travel coming up this weekend. Are you headed to Vegas? Is that on your agenda this year?
No, I actually did not qualify. I only played in really one tournament where I could have qualified, which is the BCBC, and I didn't give it much of a scare. So no, it's tough for me to get anywhere where I can play. Keeneland used to be my fallback option, but with me making the morning line, I can't play their contest. So
that is a bummer. Well, I'll miss being out there. You'll miss being out there. Hopefully, I don't know what their plans are going forward, but hoping that moves to a weekend that doesn't conflict with over here and can be gotten to. I also, unfortunately, won't be able to make it to San Diego. I would have done, but I've got Keeneland business that weekend, so I'll be in Lexington instead. All right, let's dive into some of the recapping from last weekend. It was the Tampa Bay Derby, and putting aside the tote stuff that we'll get to in a minute, let's just talk about the results of the race, Nick. This was one that came back very, very slow final time-wise, but from everything I'm hearing, the posted fractions were accurate, and they were glacially slow. Is this the type of situation where the pace was so slow that we don't need to worry that much about how slow the final figure was, or do you think this was just a slow race overall and not one that's likely to have much impact on the Derby doings going forward?
So I'm a little more inclined to say that because of the slow pace, unquestionably the final time was negatively impacted. That seems basic and doesn't seem as if there could be any dispute with that. So I would say that, you know, you can really chalk up the defeat for the victory for domestic product to that. And so I would say that the figure is probably not, it's a little bit Sierra Leone-like. I should say maybe a little bit more Sierra Leone-light in the sense that we're going to be dealing with a final time figure that was so heavily influenced by a super slow pace that, you know, you just can't have any other way to approach it than to say this horse needs another opportunity to prove whether he's really worthy. And so hopefully he'll do it. He's supposedly going to go in the wood, and we'll see what he ends up doing there, because that'll give us more of a window into exactly what kind of horse he is. So hard to get a read for domestic product. He ran well, all things considered. He was kind of wedged behind horses and still performed credibly. But it's not the easiest spot to make a determination based on a final time figure. I would be interested in seeing what a pace adjusted figure like a Timeform US one looks like.
Yeah, I haven't. If you could actually do me a favor, the internet's being a little wonky here. Surprise, surprise. If you want to
dig,
looking
it up right now.
What they ended up doing. The buyer, I think, was it just an 80 or low 80s? But he did it the
82.
Right way. 82. Okay. He did it the right way in the sense of, I thought he showed toughness. He did it from a little bit off of that glacial pace. And, you know, he certainly showed that he's a hard trying sort. I found the figure so low that it made it a little tricky for me to get, you know, overly excited. I didn't want to make a strong case to push him into our Derby top 10 or anything off that. But I think you probably make the key point that we're going to really need to see him run one more time. And I guess sounds like Chad Brown will be dividing up where his charges go if domestic product's going to be in New York. And I imagine Sierra Leone will contest the Bluegrass as his recent Derby serious contenders have done. Is that what you're hearing? And were you able to dig up that figure?
Yeah, 96 on the Timeform US scale. So not a particularly strong figure. Yeah, projected as well. So, I mean, I think the pace was just so slow that there really wasn't much that Craig could do with it either. So, you know, kind of a glorified workout in that sense, right? We just get nothing out of really determining what went on there. And we'll have to see what happens now moving forward.
We're overdue from a visit from Sean Borman to not only catch us up on how his pro player doings in Hong Kong have been, but it's always interesting to get his read on these Derby preps. Curious to see if on late pace figure, specifically Sean's late pace figure, if maybe there's some better or different indicator of his ability other than the giant question marks that you and I are throwing up when we look back to the Tampa Bay Derby. Feels like he's the horse we need to be focusing on, and maybe the only horse we need to be focusing on in there. But am I giving any of the other short shrift? Did you have a horse you saw competing in that race that you wanted to put in your tracker or maybe bet next time?
Maybe not graded stakes caliber, but I do think you have to at least recognize the race that Hartand ran. He was fifth, so he might be nothing more than an allowance horse when push comes to shove. But this was a little bit of a catchy run because the pace was so slow. He did kind of pass a couple of horses, and he did make his move ultimately on the inside, which I don't really know if that was exactly where he wanted to be. So he's a horse that you might see come back in something that could be a little interesting. He had been a little dressed up, I thought, going into that race. So we'll see. But it's hard to take any of these horses all that seriously. They're going to have to improve a lot in their next start. I know the barn was feeling confident about domestic product coming out of his race in the Holy Bull. So, you know, at least he'll have some seasoning. He'll have a couple of mile and an eighth races as a two-year-old under him and three preps as a three-year-old. So, I mean, we're going to know kind of what he is. We just might know he's not good enough.
Yeah, to be determined. But I think, you know, pace or no pace, when the final figure is that slow, it's hard to get excited from here. We'll say it that way. We're going to do a little bit more recapping later in the show. We're going to have Dale Romans on to talk about Coppola and his big win and upward trajectory. Looking forward to chatting to Dale. Obviously, we have to talk about the elephant in the room, the tote delay. But before we get to that, Nick, was there any other stakes performance or maiden performance or any performance you saw at the weekend that you definitely wanted to shine a spotlight on these airwaves at this point?
Yeah, got to give a little love to Sweet Azteca for Michael McCarthy, who was an impressive winner of the Grade 1 Beholder Mile. Did it nicely, got a 103 buyer speed figure. So wanted to make sure we recognized her and that performance, kind of the performance of the weekend in many ways. So I would say you want to keep an eye on her as far as some of the Grade 1 races go as the year goes on. And it was a chance really for her to step forward. There's no time for a U.S. figure in yet, but she looked like she ran a very efficient race. It was a bit of a merry-go-round, and she was 3/4 of a length clear ultimately of Adair Manor, who was five and a half lengths clear of everybody else. So good effort there, and a horse I think that really in a division that's a little thinned out depending on where we ultimately see Idiomatic come back, she feels like a horse who could be a major player.
It looked like Fast Time, and just based on that raw figure, you'd have to say it's not overstating to say a serious contender for a race like the Breeders' Cup Distaff. I don't know if any of the bookmakers have priced that up in terms of future odds, but it's always exciting when you can see horses putting up those kind of figures this point in the year. It's hard not to already start thinking about Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, no question about it. I think it'd be foolish not to. I think, you know, mid-range, you'd be looking at races like the La Troyenne and or the Apple Blossom. And ultimately, yeah, she could easily end up in a race like that.
Maybe a good excuse to check in with a friend of the show, Michael McCarthy, at some point and get his ideas about Sweet Azteca and what he thinks could be next. And just his, you know, he's a generally very honest about the upside when talking about his horses and a pretty darn good judge of that stuff. So we'll definitely check in with him at some point soon. Let's get to the elephant in the room situation. We'll start with the very basics. What the hell happened, Nick, and why did it happen in terms of these massive tote problems that affected racing all over the country, but most critically really messed up our pals at Tampa Bay over the weekend? Describe it for someone who might have been under a rock. Maybe do it that way.
Yeah, boy, not easy. So it appears as if, of course, you know, as it played out, we felt like it was all something going on with Amtote. And the understanding that I got at Sam Houston when the stewards came in to me and talked to me about what was going on was that it was an Amtote issue. And so as more light was shined on what was going on, it became clear that there was actually an issue in the transmission of information that is conducted by Roberts Communication Network. So for people that are unfamiliar with it, Roberts Communication Network handles all of the television feeds, all of the media in that regard for all the racetracks in the country. They also handle a lot of communication items that exist between tracks on signals for tote, all of those things, because tote information obviously has to be sent through a secure line. And that was the issue, is that the backup and the primary and secondary backups both failed. And when that happened, that created a situation where data was basically just completely and totally held up. The reason why we ran into the problem with some bets not merging into the actual system is that, as crazy as this sounds, information is not merged race to race in multi-race bets until before the race that's upcoming. So there were communication issues that kept information from getting into the pools. And so that was why certain bets needed to be merged, couldn't be merged, and why some bets basically had to either be paid all or refunded. You know, what is the takeaway from all of this? Our tote system is still antiquated. It's totally outdated. It's not a particularly good system. It's one that needs to be upgraded. This actually was not really a tote system failure. It was really a communication failure. Excuse me. So that particular part of it has to do with Roberts Communication Network, and that was kind of why, in a bit of a defiant statement, Todd Roberts from RCN came out and said, you know, oh, this just stop blaming Amtode. It's not an Amtode problem. It was like, well, you know, you have to understand that naturally, when something happens with regards to Amtode, we're going to blame the Tode company. And even though this was a situation where perhaps it really was not their fault, it is it's going to go that way more often than not. So. Just a little unfortunate that that happened. You know, it's a shame that it went that direction. And it was a horrible day for it to happen, obviously, with so many people involved, so many people playing on Tampa. And it's very unfortunate for Tampa Bay Downs. I mean, it basically cost them probably $3 million in handle. So, I mean, net revenue, that's over $100,000 right to their bottom line. So very, very unfortunate, and hopefully – you know, in a situation like this in the future, both the primary and secondary systems will not fail, and we just won't have something like that happen again, because it was an awful thing to have to deal with for everybody involved, and it's very unfortunate.
Feel terrible for the players affected, obviously terrible for Tampa Bay. That's fascinating that it wasn't directly related to the Tode system, but I'm going to take a wild guess, and I'll be corrected if I'm wrong. I'll fall on my sword here, that just the overall antiquated processes that racing has, had to be blamed. I mean, is there any, I take it, you know, I was one of the many saying, oh, you know, this feels like a Tote technology issue, but I mean, even if it's not specifically a Tote technology issue, isn't it fair to say that it's a larger issue with the technology and the way that the sport, you know, deals with things like merging these wagers?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, the way the wagers are merged, the way the system plays out is not set up for long-term success. It needs to be upgraded. It needs to be updated. These are the things Mike Maloney was warning about 20 years ago, and the things that Pat Cummings warned about 2 years ago in his wagering insecurity document that he wrote, white paper. So yeah, I mean, upgrades need to take place without question. And, you know, we know now how many tracks are dependent on something like Amtote, because it is one of the bigger providers. And we just, you know, we need to do everything possible to try and avoid something like this happening again, because, you know, wagering integrity, wagering security is a huge, huge issue. And having anything compromise it is just not tolerable.
What would be the mechanism to make improvements? Now I'm asking a question, committing the sin of asking a question that I have no idea of. Like, at what level in the game do people need to band together and say, hey, this is unacceptable, this is something we need to fix? As bad as this was, maybe there's even a case for worse things to happen under the current system. Like, how would, I mean, I feel like we wring our hands, or, you know, I anyway, I don't want to put anybody else under the bus here. You know, I wring my hands, I make cheeky comments on Twitter about it, but I don't really know anything about the mechanism to fix it. Maybe that's more of a PAC question, but, you know, you're obviously as up on this as basically anybody outside of a small inner circle, Nick. And I'm just curious if you have anything prescriptive to offer about how these improvements might actually be made.
Yeah, Pat would be able to give you a more learned perspective. I think he knows the ins and outs a little bit more than I do, but I definitely know that the way that info is transmitted amongst racetracks with regards to certain wagers is just really, really outdated, specifically the Superfecta pool. And so what we definitely need is an upgrade in terms of bet processing. There are tracks where bets are processed much more slowly than others. And we need to have something fixed on that, because it's not going to work the way it's currently laid out. And it's just a little too disjointed, a little too antiquated to work long term.
I got the impression from listening to the excellent JK Plus Two pod with Mike Rapoli and Pat that there are interesting conversations going on behind the scenes across a consortium of industry players. So maybe Pat is somebody to ask about this in a future, hopefully not too distant future appearance, just to, again, try to get the blueprint laid out of how this might get fixed, because sometimes I just feel like I'm screaming into the void, Nick.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if somebody could come up with what exactly needs to be done, that would be ideal. It's definitely a situation where you know, there's a lot of discussion about what needs to happen, what should be done, who could do this, who could do that. And, you know, somebody's going to have to just take it on. And, you know, realistically looking at it, the Stronach Group owns AmTote and Churchill Downs and Naira in partnership own UnitedTote. So, I mean, they're the power players in the game right now. And one of them is going to have to stand up and say, hey, you know, we're going to be responsible for bringing this up to date, modernize it, and get it to the point where we're not going to worry about whether something bad could happen.
Yeah, it's one of those things where everybody's going to have to band together. And you're right, these corporate relationships do exist. We know these people talk. So, you know, hopefully these conversations are happening at a very high level. Anyway, to be continued, Nick. Really appreciate your perspective on that and the racing from Tampa at the weekend. We're going to have you back. I may put you in the position of hosting the late week show if you're game. I will be on air, though, all week. I'm going to try to bring daily little updates from Cheltenham. Probably won't have a ton of bandwidth to do my usual work on the USA racing next weekend, but if you can pinch hit for me there, we'll be in business. They're going down to post here at Cheltenham, Nick, so I'm going to go, and then we'll run a quick ad and get to our next guest, but really appreciate you coming on these airwaves today.
Sounds great, my friend. Thanks for having me, and enjoy your time over there.
Next up on the show, as promised, we bring in a man who just won another in a series of graded stakes races with Coppola, a horse owned by our friends at Sport of Kings Partners. Always a pleasure to have back on the In the Money airwaves, Dale Romans. Dale, how are things going?
Things are going well. We're just leaving the sale in Ocala, looking for another good racehorse.
Nice. How did the sale go down there? How did the OBS sale go?
It's been pretty strong. There's a lot of good horses, and the energy was good. Looked like a lot of people were getting some good stock.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was seeing that a lot of the horses that sold for big money were ones that were galloping under tack as opposed to the ones that were breezing. Is that a topic that you have any opinion on, or, you know, are you just looking for a good horse however they present themselves?
We're just looking at a good horse. I mean, my friends at West Point Thoroughbred spent $1.2 million on the Tappet Colt to gallop, you know, but that was a unique situation. That was those horses were late to the sale, and they were you know, a dispersal from a great breeder and owner of racehorses, and there was some good stock that you wouldn't have normally seen at the 2-year-old sale. So I think people wanted to get a hold of some of that blood.
Makes perfect sense to me. We got to start by talking about Coppola. Really interesting horse. This was a horse that, for me anyway, looking at his blood and, you know, the people who had him originally, would have thought, you know, you would have maybe guessed was a dirt horse. Has obviously really made a huge mark on turf. What was it about Coppola that made you think, hey, maybe this horse has been running on the wrong surface up till now?
Well, when he came into me, and Carlos Martin had him, he sent him in and said he just didn't handle the dirt at Aqueduct when they were running. He said, he wanted me to give him a shot on the turf, so I'll give him the credit there, and he ran well. But remember, this horse has won 3 races on the dirt. He's a very versatile horse with a great pedigree, and I think he's just getting better.
What was the sort of moment where the penny dropped and you thought he might be like up to the graded stakes level on turf?
Well, I think when he ran at Churchill last year, when Johnny Velasquez rode him, and he came from off the pace, split horses, and that's when he proved to me that he was going to be a real racehorse, and he steadily improved. You know, those old turf sprinters, they can run for quite a while.
Yeah, well, that's a great thing when you have a horse that can continue to stay in training for sure. Yeah, absolutely flash talent and sort of showed early on, had that stakes potential. What is he like to be around? What does he act like in the mornings?
He's a mean son of a gun. You can't get close to him. He's all racehorse. He's nobody's pet. And, you know, Tammy gets on him every day for me, and she goes out and knows how to handle him, knows him well, and contributes a lot to his success. So he's not anybody's pet. Now he's all racehorse. You know, we've been talking lately about it. We don't have to do a whole lot more with him being by into mischief. Somebody might want to stand him. He might make a good stud down the road.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, based on those bloodlines and the stake success, and like you said, it's not like he couldn't act on the dirt. It just feels like he's found this better home. What I'm getting the impression, he's not one you want to feed carrots to, though.
No, not at all. And, you know, he's not a horse for Sport of Kings to bring partners around to pet on and love on, but he's a great one to show up to the races and go to the winner's circle with.
You need both of those things, I imagine, when you're in the position of our friends at Sport of Kings Partners. How did you get hooked up with this group in the first place, Dale?
Well, you know, Michael just called me out of the blue one day, wanted to get some horses, and he had been in the game before in a couple of different ways, and so he sent Copeland down to run at Gulfstream Park, and now we've got three horses. Copeland's still carrying the stable right now. He's got several across the country, and they're doing some good things and doing a lot of things right. I think Sport of Kings is a group you're going to hear from.
Love to hear that. It's really interesting to me because they do have their different tentacles in different parts of the game. But how huge do you think it is for a newer public racing partnership like them to have this kind of stake success right away? I mean, it sort of puts them on the map in a big way.
It does. And it brings attention and people know they're out there and they're doing things right. And, you know, Muhammad Mubarak has been their stable manager. He's a good friend. He does a good job, and he's run some big stables in his life. And I think that they're doing so many things right that people are going to start coming and investing with them. And you'll have a lot of fun if you do. Good people.
For sure. I've really enjoyed our experience with them. You mentioned Muhammad and knowing him for a long time. I remember him from back, gosh, longer ago, Dale, than I want to say, when he was, you know, training for and helping out on the management side with Buckram Oak. Where did you first come across Muhammad?
Oh, I mean, 30 years ago when Muhammad was, people forget that he trained for Buckram Oak and had great success, trained in Europe and in the United States, and then went on to be the manager when they got really too big for him just to have them buy them up with different people. But Muhammad's been a friend a long time, and he understands the game inside and out. And he's done a good job for Sport of Kings, and I think that they're going to have a lot of success with him.
We might have to do a show at some point, Dale, with you and him telling stories from the old days. Would you be up for that?
Yeah, I'd be up for it. It'd be a good show. I mean, you better cut out a little time, though. I don't know how long your show stays on, but it better be a while. We might have to do a part two.
We can get you guys going, no problem at all. It's been fun. Now, is it at all funny to have somebody who's a racing manager who's also a trainer? I mean, I could see that cutting both ways. He's obviously got knowledge and opinions, but, you know, do you mind having somebody with his kind of classic race winning resume looking over your shoulder at all, or is it all to the good?
Not at all. It's all good. I mean, I'm confident in what we're doing, and he's confident in what we're doing, and that makes for a good team. It's never a bad thing. A lot of knowledge to bounce things off of, and, you know, you can't be everywhere. So, like, I have to stay at the racetrack, and these sales are going on. Muhammad's out there looking for horses, and he'll call and ask my opinion, and I'll call and ask his. It's not a problem at all.
Teamwork makes the dream work, as they say. What are the other horses, Dale, you have right now for Sport of Kings? When might we expect to see them?
Well, we got a couple we haven't started yet, but we're looking for here at the end of the meet or early at Keeneland. I don't know if they're Copla level yet, but we're going to find out. Just a couple of horses we haven't gotten going yet.
Gotcha. So early days, too early to get too into detail. What about the rest of your barn right now at Gulfstream? Any runners in particular you're excited about or the listeners might want to be popping in their stable mail?
Well, we're starting to wind down right now for Gulfstream. We got a couple more starters, but I think when we get to Keeneland, we're going to have a nice little run. We got some horses that have got some races under them down here and didn't quite win here or run as well as we wanted them to. But I think that with those races under their belt, they're going to go up there and do pretty good.
Speaking of Keeneland, is that the next presumptive stop for Coppola and the big graded stake turf sprint early in the meet?
Yeah, April 6th is the next big race for him, and that'd be a big test. It's a $400,000 race, and hopefully he'll go up there and get a big check. I mean, he's only a few thousand away from $500,000 in earnings now, so the goal is to get him to $1 million before the end of the year.
I like that goal. Very, very cool. What does it mean for you as a Kentucky guy, Dale, to win races at Keeneland? Does it mean more than anywhere else, or, you know, is it really just all about the horses and the purses as you go along?
No, it's all about the horses. But, you know, that's home. Kentucky, Churchill, my two main racetracks is where I've had most of my success. And I like being there, and I like winning there in front of the home crowd. So, I mean, this horse will take us in there and make us look good.
That's the plan. I love it. really appreciate you coming on today and talking a little bit about Coppola and our friends at Sport of Kings Racing Partners. If folks want to learn a little bit more about their operation, it's sokracing.com. And it sounds like a group, Dale, that you're happy to be associated with and are looking to do more business with in the future.
No, I'm very happy with them. And yeah, people should go to the website, look them over, start following the horses, and get involved.
And I like this idea of having you and Muhammad on soon to maybe tell some stories. We can go as long as you need. That's the great thing about podcasts. You know, we don't have commercial breaks on the every 15 minutes. We can do whatever the heck we want. And I have a feeling that's the way you like to roll too.
Yeah, it is. When you get it set up, I'll be there.
Dale, really appreciate you, my friend, and excited to have you back on soon to talk about Coppola and everything else going on with you and your barn. True legend of the game, one of my favorite people in racing, Dale Roman. It's always a pleasure to have you on these airwaves.
Thank you, bud. Thanks for having me.
That's going to do it for this somewhat truncated edition of the show. Sorry to be a little late this week. Obviously a little tricky with it running around the world here. Hope folks have been enjoying the daily coverage from the Cheltenham Festival. We'll have shows with Sean Clancy, God willing, from Thursday and Friday as well. Sean's been on fire. Hopefully we can continue to take advantage of his excellent opinions. But I really want to thank Dale Romans and Nick Tamaro for their time on this show. We also want to thank our founding partners over at 10 Strike Racing. You know how around here we always love to root for the purple and black. You know, 10 Strike have horses with Sean and River D Stables. What a fun thing to dream on. Maybe, just maybe someday, we'll get a River D runner / 10 Strike runner. We've had River D runners at the festival before. Maybe we'll get a River D 10 Strike runner. A man can dream, can he? I want in on that partnership, by the way. We'll also thank Kim Weir and the great work she does with Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga. She's been with us since the very beginning, and we eagerly await learning more about this new venture. It's going to be a lot more public-facing in a way that we in the money media people can benefit from in a hands-on way. Very excited about that. To learn more about their cause, to give to their generous, to give generously to their amazing cause, inthemoneypodcast.com/horses is the place you want to check out. What else? Most of all, I want to thank all of you, the listeners, for making these shows so much fun to do. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.